Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to another episode of the Bamateur Hour. In this episode, we're going to do upon further review of the Alabama win over Vanderbilt. There's a lot to chop up. Great win. Diego, we shut him up and sent him on his way. See ya, Diego. I don't know if he's going to come back for his 18th year in college next year or not. We shall see. There'll probably be some lawsuits filed. Today is Tuesday, October 7th, 2025, in the year of our Lord. Thank you for tuning in. We now have over 4,900 subscribers to the YouTube channel and growing. And we appreciate if you are one of those subscribers, please hit the notify button. If you're watching and haven't subscribed, please subscribe and hit the notify button. If you're accessing us on the other various feeds of our podcast, please go ahead and like, follow, and subscribe. Today I'm joined by T-Pain and G-Money. Welcome, guys. Glad to have you on here. All right, give me some quick thoughts and then we'll take a deeper dive. T-Pain, quick thoughts on this great win after having a chance to think about it further.
Yeah, just really enjoying the win over Vanderbilt. And as I said the other day, I've never been so excited to beat the Commodores. That was wild. And to sing, hey, Doors. That's it.
G-Money.
It was, a very gratifying win. Sorry, I'm trying to get my camera right. A very gratifying win. And our defense showed they can contain an elite dual threat quarterback. And that was one of my big takeaways from the game.
I love doing Rammer Jammer and saying, instead of saying, hey, Commodores, is hey, Diego, da-da-da-da, hey, Diego. So I love doing that. That was a lot of fun.
John, it's funny that when you yelled, hey, Diego, that reminded me of at the Final Four. And you're like, Coach L. I was like, oh my gosh, John.
All right. For all you subscribers who don't know, I am a proud North Carolina grad. And that was 2022, was it not? When we were at the Final Four, it was Duke, Carolina in the semis. And I was very wound up and very nervous because it was going to be an awful experience to go down there and watch Carolina lose to Duke. But Carolina pulls it out. Coach K, a.k.a. Coach L, takes the big loss, his final game ever. He has to lose to Carolina in the semifinals in the Final Four, and it was a fabulous experience. So
that was an incredible Final Four, because on the other side you had Villanova and Kansas, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was wild.
Blue Bloods.
The whole arena was a shade of blue. It was wild.
And when Carolina was playing Duke, it was three-fourths of the arena in whatever blue versus the Duke blue.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was a great experience. So, yes, I enjoyed vanquishing Coach L in his final game and sending him on his way. It was quite, but of course, the next game had a 15-point lead at halftime against Kansas, and then we kind of fell apart. So,
the last thing I'll say about basketball is, kind of like Bruce Pearl, he just retired, and his last home game was his loss against Bama.
That's true.
Woo! And what a game that was.
And then Florida sent him on his way with an L after that in the Final Four. So some parallels there, although he never got a natty and didn't get to cut the nets down. But
right.
Oh, well. All right, guys, couple things, couple thoughts. I love that Bama is in control of its own destiny. 4-1 overall, 2-0 in the SEC. That's huge. We got, what, that's five. We got 7 games left. I'd love to go 7-0. Let's just put up the big 10 or 11-1. Let's do this thing. Let's get to the SEC championship. That would be fabulous. I want to see it happen. You know, what are your guys' thoughts about Bama, where we are after this Vandy win? Jump in there, guys.
We're in the driver's seat, you know, and everything's still in front of us, as we always hear coaches say, but it's true. And I'm trusting this coaching staff a whole lot more than I did after week one. So I think they're seeing what it takes to coach in this league. And, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to the next game.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's, you know, we're not only in the driver's seat, I think we should be favored in every remaining game. And I think we've earned the right to be favored with our play, especially in the last 2 games. It's looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, DeBoer's got to prove he can win another big game on the road in the SEC. He was 1-3 last year, so it's time to go 2-0, baby. Let's go. Let's get on the road. Let's get prepared. You guys put those blinders on, refocus, don't drink the rat poison, guys. Make it happen. I want to see it. I think it's going to be a tough, tough game. I'm hoping that Missouri's not as good as I think they are, but I think it's going to be a war again. I'll take a 1-point victory. Let's go. And it's 11 a.m. game, so it's going to be an early morning roll call. I hope they get up there in time and get settled. And I hope they're getting them out of bed all week at 7 a.m. so that their body clocks are ready to go when that 11 o'clock kickoff rolls around. All right, let's jump back into the game. All right, so first point I had is Bama comes out. We go down the field. We have a really nice drive, which we've done every game, which I love. Then we get into that weird fourth. We go for it on fourth down. And Ty throws his first interception. And then we turn around, and Vanderbilt's got it deep in its own territory, and they get a first down. And then they just rip off this big 65-yard run. It's like the parting of the Red Sea on the right side of the line. And next thing I know, their guys at the second level running away from us. And it was like, what is happening here? So my initial reaction is, oh, no, not again. Are we really having a replay? What are your thoughts, guys, as that game opened and those two series unfolded?
I like our DBs a lot, but I'm not in love with our DBs yet for rush defense. Damani was out of position there, the big Pavia run. Xavier Brown was out of position. We have some work to do. I mean, I like our next 7 games, and you know, we got some tough opponents, there's no question. And I think there's going to be some moments in the next 7 games where we're kind of cinching up like, oh, no. But if I had to pick out the one thing, I think our rush defense, including the second level guys, we can't allow explosive plays like that on simple, you know, off tackle runs.
Yeah, I'm not at that moment, John. After that long run and after our interception, I didn't feel good. I'll be honest. It felt like not again, not again. And so yeah, I wasn't feeling good at that moment for sure.
That's when T-Pain took off to get some funnel cake.
That's right. I said I want some apple fries.
and that's when I threw up in my mouth.
Yeah.
I pulled a Will K and threw up in my mouth. So it was that was real. Guys, I didn't understand the play call on the 4th-and-1. I'm like, come on, Grubb. And again, I love Grubb as an OC. I think he's a great OC, but sometimes he gets a little too cute. It's like, we're so good. Ty is so surgical about those 1 to 5 yard passes. We just needed a yard. I didn't get it. So I was very frustrated.
Especially when you have
a
running back like Jam, who looks like the Incredible Hulk and who's gashing them for 4, 6, 4 right. and a half, and then it's 4th-and-1. Hey, I got a great idea. You know, let's throw an out to the left side for 12 yards and throw a pick. Doesn't add up.
Yeah, and then you have another running back who weighs 240 pounds and another running back who weighs 360. So it's like, I mean, come on, guys. Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna use that play later in the game, why not right there on the first drive? Golly.
Well, and there's another guy on the roster that they hadn't put in the backfield, but he played running back in high school, and that's LT Overton. And they
Oh,
could have
really?
lined him up back there, and he's 270 and
Yeah.
fast, and could have had him run up in there and gash some people as well. It's like, of all the plays, I just thought it was really stupid. And do we really think Vanderbilt was going to bite on that? And we're going to have a was that Quavis who was there, and he was going to get wide open? And I didn't get it. We needed
And I
one
did see
yard.
that y'all might have seen this too, but I saw the film on from behind Ty, and I mean, it wasn't a great throw. Ty really didn't see the guy or something, so he could have thrown it out of bounds or something. But it was fourth down, so I guess he had to go for it. But
Yeah, and actually getting the interception and where they ended up with the ball probably would have
yeah,
been better than us punting and
yeah,
them getting the ball to 20. But still, in
yeah.
case he'd run it back, gotten a pick six out of it. I just hated the play call.
Yeah, it was a bad play call. I mean, they had been running pretty successfully, as Gary said, up to that point. It's like you said before, and like I've said in the past, I feel like sometimes Ryan Grubb gets a little bored and he's like, but I have these cool plays I want to try. I'm like, dude, if it's working, just keep doing it.
And then on the Cedric Alexander 65-yard run, I went back and I really looked at that play, and we had a single high safety, and if you guys remember, they ran to the right side and Diego went to the left. So Diego handed off and then he acted like he was going to boot to the left. So
Ray
you had
Hubbard.
Bray Hubbard, but he had cheated over to the strong side where Diego went with the fake. So he came in and went to the opposite side. So he was the last line of defense, and he got way out of position because had he stayed in the middle of the field and let the rest of the team worry about the running play, he would have had plenty of depth to have had an angle and stopped that play for, say, 10 to 20 yards instead of a 65-yard touchdown. So not only did Damani Jackson get blocked and taken out of the play, but Bray sucked up and he didn't stay back. And it's kind of like that play where Squirrel White, where we had nobody over the top, and Squirrel White, we had Dejon Lee on the press coverage. Same thing there, Bray. Your number one job is don't let anybody get behind you and don't get sucked up with the fakes. And he was so worried about Diego Pavi, he got sucked up. And by the time he realized what was going on, Cedric Alexander was gone and he could not run. I don't know if you saw him running, but he got left in the dust.
Pat Dye used to say hindsight's 50-50, and I'm 100% with you, Bama John. But when you've got a true dual threat who also gashed us for 35 yards, in a chunk play there, you got to be a little more respectful on that fake. So I'm not saying Bray made a great play. 2 weeks before that, he was SEC Defensive Player of the Week. He's played well this season so far, but I will say it just having that dual threat just changes the dynamic in a way where, in terms of their assignment, he probably cheated a little bit too much. He was supposed to cheat, just not that much.
Well, but he should have stayed deep, was my point. Is he doesn't have containment on the end on either side. He's last line of defense because we had a 5-5. So we had five guys on the line and we had five guys across the field, and he's got to stay at home deep, and he's the guy that keeps him from going from six. And you saw him suck up and to the side where Diego was, whereas he had stayed in the middle of the field. Okay, maybe if we didn't contain Diego and he got a pocket lane, he could have stopped him from 15 to 20. And that's his job. His job is not to get a sack because he wasn't blitzing. That's not his job. It's to keep the home run from happening, and he got wasted.
Maybe
So,
he suffered from Diego derangement syndrome.
absolutely,
That's right.
as we all did that day.
It'd be different if Bray Hubbard had 4.3 speed, but he doesn't. So he needs to kind of don't bite so hard.
And I will say, we didn't get caught with our pants down again like we did on that play. And we really got exposed. So, again, hats off to our defense for adjusting for a DeBoer getting in Kane's face and Kane making those, okay, there we go, making those adjustments. So I was happy to see that because after that, Vanderbilt had 109 yards rushing in the first half. No, they had 109 yards rushing at that point in the game when at the end of the first quarter, and we gave up 126 in the first half, and I think they had, what was the stats? We had, let me quickly scroll through this. Yeah, they
I'm
had
scrolling. One of our sponsors, Sprite Zero, just wanted to give a shout out.
They had 136 for the game. So in the second half, we held them to 10 yards. So, I mean, kudos for making the adjustments. And unlike Florida State, where we got gashed the whole game, we really clamped down on them. But I was just beside myself at that point. But happy that, you know, that we finished out. And then after that, let's see, they score. And then we come down and we get another nice drive. And then what do? The botch field goal.
Yeah. Hey, going back a second, you know, tie through the interception. What I did like is the very next possession, he came out firing again, you know, and I was like, man, this is awesome. This guy has a little bit of moxie. And he missed a pass right across the middle.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Next drive, but he went for it, and I like him. I like him a lot.
Well, and, you know, around the time of that drive, Ty showed a little bit, again, that he's super comfortable in the middle. He didn't have a great first quarter, but he hit Rico Scott on a nice inside route. And then overthrew Lozier Brooks on an outside right, like bad overthrow. Now, he caught Jeremy on the outside route for the touchdown. But basically, again, going back to what we've said in previous episodes, Ty is so comfortable over the middle, which is very rare for a college quarterback. So I think it's huge.
And so we missed the field goal. And then they go right back down the field, and that's the one where Diego Gash just with that run up the middle. But I think Justin Jefferson, hero of the game, ran him down, took him down, and Bray Hubbard was right there that he was going to get him too. So Bray didn't get sucked in like he did on the other play. And so we ran him down, and then that's the play where Justin Jefferson up, and they're about to go up 14-0, and I'm like, that was a first down, I believe, when he was going down. And then Justin Jefferson strips that ball out, and we get the ball. And I'm just like, oh, thank you. And then
that's amazing.
And then what
Tim
is
Tim Keenan recovered that.
Yeah.
I made a note on that drive that, you know, of course they're running a lot of RPOs, but just that Pavia's decision-making was really good. You know, that's one of the things he's really known for. So that even makes, you know, our eventual defensive stats and holding them to 14 and everything even that more impressive.
And I don't blame that turnover on Pavia. He was extending. He was, you know, he was going to get him down there first and goal at whatever it was, the 3-5, wherever we got the ball. And Justin Jefferson just made a heck of a play.
Hey, JJ is, hey, we're old enough to remember this. JJ is dynamite.
Dynamite, baby. I love it. I love it. And then what does Ty do right there? He's had two drives where we've moved the ball and we've gotten it down into the scoring territory, and he comes right out, goes right down the field, boom. And that's when it flipped over into the second quarter, and then we get on the board. So instead of being down 14-0, it's 7-7. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And so 7-7, And then, we go to the half at 14 all, and I'm going to talk some more about that later, but we go to the half 14 all, and I'm like, okay, this is anybody's game. And I'm feeling pretty good about where we are. And then, but Vandy gets the ball and comes out, and we hold him, go down, kick a field goal. Vandy gets the ball again, we hold him, we go down and kick a field goal. Now we're up 20-6.
Yeah, can I back up for a second,
Oh,
Joe?
yeah, please.
So back to the second quarter, like Ty had a great scramble where he hit Ryan for that 14-yard touchdown, and it reminded me so much of the FSU game where he scrambled on a critical third down and missed Ryan. It's just we're watching him grow up before our very eyes, and I saw some stats this week that Ty's or excuse me, Ryan is leading the SEC with drop passes at 1.5 a game or something like that.
Wow.
And I try to think about, okay, who has Bama had? You guys know I love my comparisons. Who has Bama had that was like a major factor at wideout who also was kind of developed a reputation for drops? Jermaine Burton, who's playing for the Bengals now. He had some critical drops at critical times. I think Ryan's going to be settling more and more as the season goes on, and down the stretch when we've got some really tough games, Oklahoma coming to town, at Auburn, I expect big things of Ryan.
Well, and Julio, right? Julio
Yeah.
early in his career would drop balls, and
Yeah.
he'd be open, and just you're like, what? So I think Ryan would. And the nice thing is there's so many receivers and there's so many options that Ty has, is that we're not reliant on Ryan. And Rick noted to me during the game, it's like Ryan's not out there every play. I mean, maybe half the snaps on offense. Don't you think he was out there
Yeah.
about half the
Yeah.
snaps?
Half. Yeah. Half.
Felt like it.
And I think Germ probably had the most snaps of
Right.
anybody. He was on the field most consistently, but they rotated in. I mean, Meadows got on the field. Who else got it? There was Rico Scott was out there. I mean, they were rotating a bunch of
Oh,
guys out there.
and Bakwe got out there. And Bakwe, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I think Jeremy is so valuable because he is a great football player, period. Where Ryan is a spectacular receiver when he catches it and dynamic with the ball in his hand. But Jeremy is so valuable for all aspects of the game.
Yeah, he's the leader in the room. He's played himself into a first round draft pick, and to me, he's Mr. Dependable.
Yeah.
He is just, you can count on him.
He did miss one. He dropped one at the very beginning. Remember that? He dropped
Yeah,
one.
but he got popped, didn't he? I thought he
The
got.
ball hit his hands and then he got popped. But
Yeah.
anyway, it was close.
But to
Yeah,
me, that's
speaking
the
of that
only
on the
major
field.
drop he's had, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
No, I was just gonna say we're talking about earlier Ty's placement and kind of where he chose. So in that third quarter, you could just see him getting in the rhythm. Like he had an awesome scramble. Where he hit loads here for a 17-yard pass, and then hit next player, maybe two plays later, hit Jeremy over the middle, and you could just watch it like him go from kind of uncomfortable, but us leaning on jam, which was how nice is that option? Like Ty, you're kind of out of rhythm a little bit. Vandy's defensive line was kind of stepping up, and so you have options just handing off to jam, and then as you get comfortable, it's like you just feel like we're scoring now.
And
Yeah, I
I
saw
want to
someone
go
breaking
ahead,
down.
Rick.
Sorry, I saw someone breaking down film of the game, and they were talking about how Vandy would try to disguise defenses, and Ty had no problems with it. I mean, he can really analyze well, and then make great decisions even after he snaps the ball. And then I heard Eli Drinkwitz today talking about the game this Saturday, and how he said the same thing. He said, "I watched Vanderbilt and Georgia game." He said, "This kid has a command of the offense that is really high level, and he can see defenses and even see when we're trying to disguise." So he said, "We're gonna have to pick our poison this weekend. Do we go to zone, let him pick us apart, try to go after him?" And so I think we have a really dangerous offense with him at the helm.
Yeah, and Ty, we talked about after the Georgia game, him praising his teammates and giving them all the credit, which is, you know, the sign of a leader. But in the post game this week, he actually blamed himself too. He was like, because we took four sacks, Vandy had six tackles for loss. And that reminded me that there was a play in the third quarter where it was a first and 10, and he literally held on to the ball too long, didn't get rid of it, didn't try to scramble, just kind of indecision. That's unlike him. And then the post game, he's immediately like, that's on me. I've got to do better. It's just like, if you're a coach, that's like music to your ears. You're watching him, you know, take the hits, give the glory. He's got that humility. And so to have the ability to make the read, scramble ability and all that, and then you pair that with just a humble guy that's trying to get better week after week, it's a good, pretty good recipe.
Well, today he was asked about, I think it was today or yesterday, Ty was asked about Caden Proctor's comment. Proctor said he's playing like a Heisman quarterback. And he said, hey, man, I would not be a Heisman candidate if it wasn't for those guys. And he was really quick to take the limelight off himself, which I love. And then he also, as you said, Gary, they asked another reporter asking, do you feel like you're holding the ball too long, basically? And he goes, yes. He said, I need to learn, get better at that. I gave up too many sacks. That wasn't the line's fault. It was my fault. And he said, they worked too hard for me to take sacks like that. So I think he's doing everything right now.
Well, and when you said, Gary, on that first touchdown pass, he was scrambling and he moved and then he set his feet and threw the ball and found Germ on that touch. No, that was Ryan on that one. Yep. But that was a scramble play. So, I mean, it's a fine line between his ability to scramble and do a scramble drill and then find the receivers downfield and then holding on to the ball too long and knowing when to get rid of the ball. And I thought he walked that line pretty well in Vanderbilt. Yeah, he took four sacks, but we still won the game. He was very effective. He moved the ball very well. You know, versus FSU, he took a lot of lumps, and I think he learned a lot of lessons in that game. I mean, he's still growing as a quarterback, but he's so much more effective because they threw the kitchen sink at him in the first game, and I think he's seen so much after that first game that it's really hard to rattle him now. Because he was very effective against FSU. I still think he played a great game, but he wasn't ready for all that extra noise that they did, particularly when they got across into the FSU end of the field, because we had those four trips beyond the 40-yard line and came away with nothing on four trips, and that was the difference in the game. So this time, we at least got those field goals. I think we had nine possessions, and we scored on six of the nine possessions, which is huge, huge.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say, so, you know, there's really no substitute for experience. That's true if you're looking at a trial lawyer or a surgeon or whatever. And, you know, I can imagine the scrimmages and obviously the 8A game or whatever. I mean, you're going up against a great front seven. You're going up against some great DBs, but it's not the same as playing a live opponent in a real game. So you can see Ty growing. We've talked about the kind of learning curve, and you know, he doesn't look like the same player, didn't look like the same player against Vandy, certainly not against Georgia as he did against FSU. And we're seeing FSU's not better than Georgia. I mean, FSU and Vandy would be an interesting game on a neutral site. He's getting there. And again, it's, you don't want to count your chickens before they hatch, but we got some chickens.
Oh yeah.
Hey, you know, even the average fan who doesn't really watch closely is starting to realize, for instance, at the game Saturday, a guy next to me said, he said, why was he not playing last year? I said, exactly. I mean, it's like, and I would say to John at the game, I said, Milroe couldn't do that. I mean, he just is amazing. And like, as y'all said, when he scrambles and then stops and then collects himself and throws a beeline down the field 30 yards, it's something to see, man. It's great.
Can I make a comment about that, though? Milroe didn't have Ryan Grove.
That's true. So Milroe should excel at the Seahawks. He has a good OC there, so maybe he'll be great. I don't know.
Yeah, Milroe regressed from if you look at his stats in season one under Saban versus where he went last year, he regressed. He got worse. More turnovers, took more sacks, more negative plays. He ran the ball really well and had a lot of rushing touchdowns, but just all the turnovers, interceptions, less TD passes. It was a rough year. And I don't know how much Grubb would have helped him, because I'm not sure that his skill set fits what Grubb wants to do. And I think Ty's fits perfectly.
Grubb would not have helped this. Milroe had the tendency to run across the line of scrimmage and then throw the ball. He did that several times. Yeah. But man, and he would run out, and he was also a chiseled specimen, and he would run out of bounds 2 and 3 yards early. I'm like, dude, make contact with that corner and go ahead and get a first down. It's okay. But that would drive me nuts, man. Ty just has a better awareness of where he is on the field, you know, where we are in the game. And I think it'll play out in the next 5, 10 years in the NFL. I think Ty's gonna have a good career.
I got a question though. What's up with the gum in the post game? He's always smacking the gum. I'm like, is that like a Nicorette or something? He's just
he does that all the time. I think that's just a nervous habit.
Yeah, probably.
So I love Ty's resiliency. So he goes down, gets the touchdown, then Vanderbilt punts to us and puts us back. And I guess we're on like the 18-yard line. And then for whatever reason, we're backed up, and Grubb calls an aggressive like 5-step, 6-step drop. And he's going back, and I'm like, number one, why aren't we doing something quick or just running the ball? We have bad – maybe we're even on like the 12 or the 13. But – so he takes a bad sack, so we're behind the chains, and we're not going to get out of that hole. So I blame that on Grubb. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you calling some downfield shot play on first down when you're backed up by your goal line? So then we have to punt, and then we have the short punt. Vanderbilt gets it. They do the two little shovel passes. They go in and score. And now we're down to, I think it was a minute 30 left in the game when we get the ball back after Vanderbilt. And so we're in a 14-7 hole. Ty's thrown an interception. He's taken a bad sack to give Vandy a short field. And what does he do? Clinical 2-minute drive, just bing, bang, bong, boom, go in, score. And then I'm going, that's it. Do that the whole game.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
He did that in Georgia at the end of the first half. He did that against Vanderbilt. Two good defenses. And I was loving it. I love that resilience and that confidence to just run that offense and just pick them apart.
I think there are only 57 seconds left and when that drive started. And I applaud Kalen DeBoer calling the timeouts, you know, when he did. That was awesome. A good time management. And then we had no timeouts. But with that offense, man, 57 seconds, that's a lot of time.
It was beautiful. And so I was very confident in that and just loved the way he managed the offense. And even though we didn't get any scores, any touchdowns until Jam Miller's, he didn't throw any passes, he just kept eating clock and chewing clock and moving the chains. And to me, that's the difference this year is we have a quarterback that can get first down, first down, first down, and isn't trying to either run the ball for the home run touchdown or, you know, throw the 50-yard bomb for the touchdown. He just picks them apart, and it was beautiful. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
It's the gimme offense.
Yeah.
It's taking what they give you and having a captain of the team who can execute what he sees, and that's what he did.
Yeah, Ty was asked today if the goal is to try to hold the ball a long time on offense. And he said, No, I don't think so. He's like, we just follow the plan. And if Jan Miller, hits one for 90 yards, that's great. We don't care if we score quickly. We're just trying to follow the offense. And like you said, Gary, take what they give us. And if it's a 9-minute drive, it's a 9-minute drive. But I think they'll be happy. They'll be happy scoring on one play. It'd be great.
Yeah. Well, and we're talking about taking what the defense gives him. He's still, and I mean this descriptively, not like as a criticism. He doesn't have a big arm. I mean, it reminds me in the third quarter, there was that real long shot to Ryan that was like 50 something yards. And if you looked at Ty's body language and he had his feet set, he had time to throw, that's the farthest he can throw it. And Ryan had to come back to get the ball. It was underthrown, and that's fine. So when you have a quarterback who's high IQ, his field vision's getting better, he's mobile enough, he's got elite accuracy to short to mid-range or sort of intermediate passes, we don't need those passes. We don't need Josh Allen. We don't have Josh Allen. And that's why I give Ryan Grubb so much credit, because he's working within the system that he has because of the talent that he has, and Ty is perfect for his style of play.
So one thing about Ty, and y'all will find this interesting. I heard this today. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Vandy fan. He's really plugged in at Vanderbilt, and he said Clark Lee said that Ty doesn't take 7-step drops. He only takes 5-step drops, and the reason is his receivers are so fast. He doesn't need to do that. He just got to get the ball out fast because they're so fast and quick. So it's hard to get to him. And that was the thing on that pass, Gary, is he just needed to throw it sooner. Because you
Right.
got Ryan streaking down there. He needed to throw it a half second or a second sooner so that Ryan didn't run away from him. You're right. He doesn't have the cannon arm that Milroe had, but he's much more accurate. I love that little play where he scrambled and he threw the little teardrop over the
Horton.
linebacker and Zay Horton went up and grabbed it. I loved all of that. And that was the thing that frustrated Vanderbilt is Ty's so accurate. Alabama had so many receivers that Clark Lee admitted he was put in a bind. What are you going to do? How are you going to stop him? And then Pavia was getting frustrated. My friend said that he was getting frustrated because we were chewing clock and he's sitting over there off the field, not able to do anything, and just getting frustrated. And that probably caused him when he threw that interception in the second half, that key red zone interception to stop that drive, is he had a guy underneath running wide open, but he chose to throw the one farther down to try to get it, down to the 5-yard line when he could have probably had a first down at, I don't know, the 18 or something and kept that drive going. But he just had that sense of urgency that I got to make something big happen because I may not get the ball back again.
Well,
And
and I thought the Vandy defense didn't play bad.
no.
We talked about it in the Georgia post game. It's like, Alabama's going to pass. And we're going to have shifts, multiples. We're going to have a lot of motion. And when you've got three or four receivers who can create separation, what are you going to do? What you're going to do is you're going to rely on the quarterback making mistakes. And other than the interception, obviously, and maybe holding the ball too long on one or two plays, Ty is very efficient, doesn't make mistakes. Therefore, it's very difficult to contain us, our offense.
And he can run pretty good too, so it's a problem.
Well, and guys, give him credit for this. He took a couple of sacks. He took some negative plays against Georgia and Vanderbilt and still got the first down. Still came back after taking a negative play and picked up the first down on either a third down or a fourth down. Our third down and fourth down conversions in this game were very, very good. So Ty is able to take that negative play, put it aside, come back, make a positive play, and still keep the chains moving. Which is very frustrating for a defense that when you make that play, you figure you're getting off the field. So I think he's done a great job of frustrating it. And how great was it in Georgia? So you had the 2-minute drive at the end of the first half in Georgia. Then he milked the clock and ran the clock out against Georgia at the end of that game. And then he was chewing so much clock at the end of the game that they got frustrated and just let Jam Miller score at the end because he was going to run the clock out. We were going to keep things going. So it was funny to watch them wear the Vanderbilt defense out, and I mean, they just kind of gave up on that jam play. I thought they fought really hard until that play where it's like, yeah, they kind of quit on that play and just jam just ran it
Yeah, the
on
thing
in.
is about our offense, you don't need trick plays. Like, we all love the trick play in the Wisconsin game, the double reverse, flea flicker, and all that. That was cool to watch. It was fun to talk about or whatever. But like in this game in the third quarter, we needed it was third down and medium. I don't know, four or five, something like that. And we did a direct snap to Jeremy. It didn't go anywhere. We had to kick a field goal. It's like we don't need to do that. Let's just, keep running our offense.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that play to Jerem is they snapped it to him. He actually had a lane to run in if he had gone off tackle inside the tackle. And he could have gotten positive yards, but he's not a running back. He's not used to looking for that hole and going up in. He tried to pop it outside and got a negative play. And it was just too cute. It was just a stupid, again, put LT and snap the ball to him and see what happens when that 265-pound guy comes roaring up in there. I want to see that. But yeah, I thought that was way too cute. They didn't need to do that. Our guys get open so easily. I didn't get that. All right, guys, I'm going to change gears here. I'm going to go through the what I call the drives and the momentum shifts in the game. And some of it we've already covered, so feel free to chime in here. But I just want to quickly go through, and you can see the shifts in the game. And I love how resilient we were that we didn't let these momentum shifts, these negative plays, spiral into a loss like it did at FSU. And to me, that was the biggest thing, is the coaching. We didn't adjust properly, and then when we had negative plays, we weren't able to get over that and get a win. So, opening drive, Bama gets into the red zone, Ty throws a pick on fourth down. Didn't like the call. Any further thoughts on that? We beat that up pretty good. Any thoughts?
No.
All right, turn around, Vandy pops 65-yard explosive play. We beat that up pretty good. That was not a great defensive alignment. And Saban would say, I don't want to coach it until you get it right. I want to coach you until you never get it wrong. And I don't know that our coaches have bought into that. We were in a bad alignment. We got out of sorts, didn't do it. We didn't execute properly. Guy busts it for 65 yards. So then Bama gets the drive. We move the ball down the field again. So we're moving the ball like we've done all year. Even against Florida State, we move the ball. Ends in a 47-yard field goal. To me, the biggest lesson out of this is we have to get the ball inside the 25-yard line or we're going for it on fourth down. We can't kick a field goal outside of the 25. I don't know if you have any other comments on that drive.
Or let Caden Proctor kick
Yes.
He probably
Yes.
could.
So, we're down 7-0. We've missed the field goal. Things are, looking bad. So then Vandy just shreds us, goes down the field. Pavia has a great run coming down the middle, and then Jefferson makes that incredible play. I mean, that was just JJ safe. Because I think if we'd gone down 14-0, guys, boy, that would have been a tough hole to dig ourselves out of. I still believe this team's resilient enough, but that would have been FSU all over again, or Vanderbilt 2.0. Instead of being in Nashville, they come up here and do it to us again. Unbelievable play. I was so pumped.
I've got two things. So, first of all, I believe if I saw this correctly, that JJ did get co-defensive player of the week,
He
right? That's the
did.
team.
Yes.
And the second thing is just an observation. I think T-Pain's growing that hair out a little bit. Am I right?
You talk about Lee.
I like that. I
That's
like that. Get wild, man.
right. With all this notoriety and money from the podcast, I'm buying this stuff for my head.
Rogaine, baby.
That's good.
Yeah.
So then we turn it around. That pretty much ends the first quarter. We take the ball down. First drive in the second quarter, score 7-7, tied up. We have that tie to Ryan on that scramble, sets his feet, fires it. Ryan's open. They run the scramble drill really well, guys. I really like the way our receivers respond and know how to move. And you have to practice that and get used to it. And that was an amazing drive. So I love the resiliency there. Okay, back to 7-7, feeling good. Any thoughts there?
No, I agree.
All right, so the next drive is that four plays and Vandy punts. Their punter was good. He pinned us back. And then that's where we get the ball. Ty takes a sack and we get the ball, do nothing on that drive because and I thought that was a poor play call by Grubb to run that play on that first play to do some shot play and do that. No. Just move the chains. Just keep the ball moving. We punt, and then our punter punts it, what, shank for 30 yards or something?
Yeah,
So
he called it.
Vandy gets the short field, the shovel passes, shreds our defense. And I don't know why Vandy didn't run that play like five more times because it worked every time. And I would have run it until we stopped it at least twice. Kind of like trying to pass a guy down the line. I mean, you keep doing it and try to make that guy stay at home. It's like I would have kept doing it. So they're up 14-7. And I'm feeling bad. And by the way, I did look at it. We got the ball with a minute 30 left, Rick, on this on
Oh,
that
okay.
defense
Okay.
drive. So we had a minute 30, and he scored in a minute and 16 seconds. So Ty just boom, 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 bing, bang, six plays down the field, tie ball game, go in the half, tied up. I was like, whoo, okay. I was like, this is a heck of a ball game, but we're in it, and I think we can win. That's kind of how I felt at that point. But the resiliency we had with all the adversity and the ways we shot ourselves in the foot, and Vanderbilt's good. They're a good team. That's kind of the way I felt at the half. Any, thoughts there?
That was huge. That last drive was huge.
I will just say this, the scramble, the scramble training reminds me of backyard football. Growing up, right? You're in that front yard and somebody's just, the quarterback's just holding it. You're trying to, so
Right.
that's old school. That should resonate with their, growing up and playing
Yeah.
in the backyard.
Yeah, you're
So,
like this. That
exactly.
way, that way.
And then you do the fake like, nah, when you
Yes,
just go
right.
down the
That's right.
middle. That's right.
So interestingly enough, here are the halftime stats. 14-14. We had 260 yards of offense. They had 214. And those numbers were way tilted toward Vanderbilt after the first quarter. But we just kept making drives, putting points on the board. They rushed for 126 yards in the first half. But we had 72 yards rushing in the first half, which, considering that we struggle to put 100 yards on the board in a lot of games, for us to have total of 260 yards and they only had 214, that we outgained them. Both teams had a takeaway. They had an interception, we had an interception, and we had two penalties for 20 yards. They had two penalties for 19 yards, but we had time of possession of 18 minutes and 23 seconds, and they had 11 minutes and 37 seconds in terms of the time of possession. So, thought that was pretty interesting.
Two words, Jam Miller. Yeah,
Yes.
that explains the time of possession.
And now we know exactly why he was the number one running back coming out of camp and why everybody was raving about him, because he played great. He played well against Georgia. He played great in this game. To me, it's clear that he's a level above the other guys.
Yeah.
So, second half comes out. Defense is on it. Our defense, Vandy punt. Then Bama drive, go down, field goal. And the third down play, when we're in field goals, when they did that shotgun snap to Germ, and we don't convert the third down because we're trying to get too cute, it would have been nice to have come out and put a seven on the board and go up 21-14. But we got some points out of it, but I was a little disappointed in that.
Can I back up? So we just
Yeah.
went through, okay, and then Vandy punted. Let's get, Shakespeare said every dog has his day, and I'm not calling him a dog, but Shelby Collins from Gardendale, Alabama, number 17, ran down Pavia from behind on that third down and made the play to force that punt. Way to go, Kelby. Get a little
Amen.
PT.
But just the defense that we're able to get them off the field without a turnover or anything to force a punt was huge. And those are those adjustments. And I give because I was ready to fire Kane after the first quarter. And then when they converted those two shovel passes and they're up 14-7, I'm like, he's got to go. And I give him credit. They made the adjustments because our defense played great in the second half to shut him out. So
And my recollection, John, was when we got the ball from that punt. Cuevas did the hurt. Do y'all remember the hurdle?
Yes.
If that safety would just get out of the way, we could have a Sports Center highlight, man. That would have been so cool.
Well, he's no Saquon Barkley, but
No.
he's pretty stout. He's a pretty strong dude, but he's no Saquon. So then Vandy gets the ball again. We force him into another punt, and then what do again? We go down the field, we get into field goal range, and it's first down on the 11-yard line, and Ty takes a sack. And that negative play. Throw the ball away, can't throw an interception, don't want to get a pick six there, but just and I can't remember. I wrote down that he took the sack on the first down. I don't remember what they were trying to run, but taking that big, and I think he took like a 10-yard sack. So we went from first and 10 on the 11 to second 20 on the 21, and then we couldn't do anything from there. But convert the field goal, so now we're up 20-14. And guys, that was it. There were four possessions in total, and we're in the fourth quarter. That's how much we chewed the clock up. Amazing. And Vanderbilt's defense is getting gas. So we put points on the board, shut them out in the third quarter. Loved it. So Vandy gets the ball there. They go six plays, 58 yards, and then Keon picks off Pavia on that play. And again, he had a guy underneath. He threw it down the middle. He had a guy running wide open underneath. If he'd taken the short pass, probably would have picked up a first down. If not, it would have been really close to the first down mark. But he got a little greedy, got a little worried that I've got to make something happen here, and worried about not being able to get the ball back, that he forced it in the tight window. And I don't know if you guys remember that Keon, it was not thrown into his chest. It was a 50-50 ball that Keon had to go take the ball away from the receiver. It was not the Bray Hubbard one where you just step back and the quarterback throws it in your chest. I thought Keon made a great play on the ball to get in there because the receiver could have caught that. So, incredible takeaway. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think from behind on that interception, I saw a video from behind, and I think Keon kind of hid behind that midfield referee. It seemed like Pavia didn't see him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a
Well,
great
I'll
play.
say this, John. You mentioned that Vandy got tired. I mentioned Kelby Collins. You saw London Simmons play a good bit. You saw Edric Hill play a bit. That's an expression of what we said in the pregame. That is that A plus roster against the B plus roster. We can sub in. I'm not saying there's no drop off. Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. But you know, there it is, man. That's a huge advantage.
We wore them out. And then the next, so Bama takes over the ball deep in our own territory on that interception. So then I love this. 16 play drive for 69 yards. We ate 8 minutes and 29 seconds off the clock and kick a field goal with 4 minutes left in the game. And I mean, that's demoralizing. And that is what we can do. It was disappointing that we didn't put it in the end zone, but we took the 2-score lead there. And so Vandy's behind, they're behind the eight ball at that point. Because it was I mean, because if Vandy goes and scores and we don't get that interception, we're down 21-20. I think we would have gone down and scored and taken the lead, but then probably would have had to go for two. And you get into all that game, and so then you're trying to hold on. So, I mean, to me, it was a really tight game until we punched that field goal in with 4 minutes to go.
Well, and that drive reminded me of the question that T-Pain had in the pregame about Ryan mixing in the 1 minute drives versus the 8 minute drives. When you got that lead and you're in the fourth quarter, it's just like we're going to chew it up. And so credit to him, certainly the players, but also credit to the game plan there to just milk it out, because that was the perfect word, John. And we've been on the other side of that over the years against a couple of opponents, demoralizing. When you're down and the other team just little chunks, and the clock's burning, it just you feel so helpless.
And Jam had multiple nice runs on that drive
Yes,
too.
he did.
And I think Riley even came in and had a nice run, but our back. So it was a nice mix of run pass. It was not just pass, but Ty was running the offense in control. Jam Miller doing his things, receivers making catches, and just milk the clock. And so I was feeling good at that point. Then we forced Vandy into the turnover on downs, and we get the short field. And I thought we'd just run the clock out, and then Vandy just didn't tackle him on that. Because I think they could have brought him down on like the 2 or 3 yard line, but I think they just kind of like, let's just get out of here. And anybody who bet on Vandy and took the points was hating that.
Yeah.
And that was it. But I just, the twists and turns and the momentum and the resiliency of the team, I just, as we went through that, that's what I kept thinking when I went back and looked at those drives is that was amazing. So tail of the tape on the stats, a couple of things I want to read out. Vandy had 2 turnovers to 1. So we won the turnover battle this year where we lost it last year.
Yep.
Time of possession, we had 37 minutes to Vandy's 23. Last Huge. Year, it was like 40 to 20. So yes. Won that one too. Penalties. Vandy had 5 penalties for 52 yards, 3 for 30. Kudos, guys. You were disciplined. You didn't lose your mind. You were under control, executing and not committing stupid penalties. So we won all 3 of those that we had lost to Vanderbilt the prior year. Total yards, Bama 486 to Vandy 334. So even though our defense gave up a lot of yardage, that bend but don't break defense and getting the 2 turnovers was huge. So hats off there. And again, we flipped the script because we didn't outgain them yardage-wise. It was close, but Vandy outgained us yardage-wise last year as well. Third down conversions, 7 of 15 for Bama, and Vandy was 5 of 12, so we won that battle. And then we converted 2 fourth downs as well, and Vandy yep. was 0 for 1 on fourth down. So, I mean, just and we outrushed them too, 146 to 136. So, just loved it. All right, comments, thoughts about those, any of those stats or any other stats you want to bring
up? I'm excited that it's 2 weeks in a row where we had less penalties than the opponent. That's great. And yes, the time of possession, it's like a flip from last year. It's great. It's amazing.
I mean, let's be honest. I think the coaching staff is listening to Bamatro. And I think it's pretty apparent. They heard you.
It is. Hey, one of their many analysts is on us.
Good be.
Hey, if you see Proctor kick the ball next week, there you go.
Bam.
Or Bam. LT running. I think Bam and John got that one right.
That's
see
right.
LT running, John gets credit for that.
I'm telling you, he could do the tush push or get him 5 yards back and call it the slam, the LT slam into the line. Just
boom. Can you imagine trying to tackle him if he had a head of steam?
Luke had to try to tackle him in a game, and it was not fun. So here's another stat. So I love the balance. We had 38 running plays and 31 pass plays. That's incredible balance. And Vanderbilt only had 18 running plays to 35 pass plays. So we had them out of balance and in panic mode, and we had
right.
control of the game. I love all of that.
You know, I think against Georgia, we had 38 and 38, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty much 50-50 right
yeah.
on, yes.
That's crazy, yeah.
All right, so passing-wise, Ty was 23 of 31. He had a couple of drops, so he should have been 25 or 26 of 31 if those guys don't drop those balls. Had 340 yards, 2 TDs, got his first interception, but he didn't let the mistake keep compounding and making things worse, because last year our quarterback would make a mistake and then it would just kind of, the dam would break and all of a sudden a little mistake would become just a comedy of errors. So I was really happy about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running wise, Jam Miller, 136 yards, 22 carries, 1 touchdown. His longest run was 22 yards, but he was just tough. Got hard yards, loved it. And I'm waiting to see him catch some more passes because we know he can do it. Use him in the pass game as well.
He caught a pass at the end of the Georgia game.
Yes. Oh, huge. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. And then in terms of receivers, Ty hit 8 different receivers. I love his ability to spread it around.
Amazing.
So
Amazing.
good, so good. And Ryan had, even though he hadn't had that drop, he had six receptions for 98 yards and a TD. Germ had five receptions for 82 yards and a TD. Isaiah Horton had a sneaky 66-yard game. I didn't realize he had that many yards. He had four catches. Quavis had three for 35. Lotsier Brooks, one for 30. I thought they could have used him a little more.
Yeah.
Run the
Yeah.
quick, just those quick slants and a little quick out. But Rico Scott had two catches for 11, and he took one shot, that one where he went up and high pointed the ball and got flipped over. So hats off for catching that. Kevin Riley had one catch for 10 yards. Jam had one for 8. So love the way we've just got so many weapons. You can't stop them all.
Well, and Jam, you talked about him receiving. I would like to see more of that. If you just rotate him, he is the primary guy. I think he's kind of earned that in this game. And then put Kevin Riley in there. When you're the defense and whoever, middle linebacker, whoever's calling the formations and the reactive formations, he's a receiver. So, I mean, if you got Jam or Kevin Riley, that's another assignment that you got to think about on a flare or in the flats or whatever. And that just complicates it even further.
And my
That's
friend
why the
said
NFL uses him.
Clark Lee said that was the conundrum he had. What are you going to do? You're either going to play a zone and just allow him to keep moving the ball down the field, or if you play aggressively, you're going to give one up over the top because guys are going to get open. So, and Clark Lee's a very good defensive coach, and he couldn't stop us. So loved it, loved it, loved it. On the defensive stats, Justin Jefferson was just a dog. 14 tackles, 9 solos, 1 sack. Had the forced fumble. Deontay Lawson had four tackles, and then a handful of guys, five different guys each had three tackles. Dejon Lee, I don't know if y'all remember, he had a nice breakup of a pass. Vanderbilt
Yes.
ended up scoring on that drive later, but he had a great breakup of that in the corner that was definitely a catchable ball. And then we had the interception, Keon Sab. That was just, great play. So
Yeah, it seemed like in the second half, Dejon Lee was taking Jackson's position a good bit. Yeah, I didn't see number one on the field a whole lot toward the end of the game. I saw Dejon Lee, number five on the field, more.
well, and that's a good sign from the coaches because sometimes if you're in your first year or two, you've got a tendency as a coach to kind of defer to seniority so that you don't upset the locker room or whatever. But I like that. Saint, you made that point in the last episode, T-Pain, that Ryan starts making mistakes and okay, you're sitting down. We don't care if you're whatever your NIL is or whatever. And he's a great player, obviously. But same with Damani. Like you missed a couple assignments. One of them I did think contributed to that 65-yard gash that Cedric Alexander ran. And then it's like, okay, we'll bring in someone else. That I mean, if you got one, two, or three recruiting class every year, we got the guys ready.
Yeah, and if you're a young incoming freshman or senior in high school, you watch this game, man, it's like Alabama is not afraid to play freshmen all over the place. And at receiver, if you're a receiver in high school, this is the place to come, man. I mean, they're throwing the ball around to eight people the last two games. It's amazing.
We love Keelan Russell, though. We love you.
We do.
Hope you stay.
And another topic for another day. And it's possible that Ty's going to go pro after this year. If he keeps playing the way he does, let's say, kind of project this. We'll get into Heisman odds in a little bit. But I mean, he's on the Heisman radar. He's in the top four for Heisman odds right now. But if Ty goes pro, it kind of alleviates a problem because it probably will keep the other two quarterbacks. But we do have a problem that if Ty comes back for another year, probably Austin Mack's gone. I think Austin Mack's gonna say, "I gotta play. I got 2 years left. I gotta go play somewhere. I'm not gonna take." And I think Keelan Russell probably willing to sit 2 years and still have 3 years left to play. I think Austin Mack will be gone. But we'll see.
Speaking
Yeah, a
of
lot of
that
that depends.
depends.
Go ahead, T-Pain.
Now, a lot of that depends on, I think, what happens this year, of course, with our team. And if Ryan Grubb leaves or not, if Ryan Grubb leaves for a head coaching job somewhere, then I don't know what happens. But yeah, like if we win the Natty this year, which I'm not saying we will, okay, settle down. But if we do, I think Ty Simpson more than likely is a first round pick, and he'll probably go.
Well, that was going to be my question. If we won the Natty, do you think that would make Ty more or less likely? You know, does he want to be an AJ McCarron and we get to, you know, or would that make him more likely to leave, assuming Ryan Grubb stays, which he probably won't?
I think he'd probably leave on top, and if we win the Natty, he's probably had a spectacular year, and I don't know if you can improve your draft stock anymore. But
And if we win the Natty, he's probably got the Heisman in his hands as well.
yeah.
And if not, he'll have been, first runner up or second runner up to the Heisman winner. But he's playing great. I cannot believe how well. Well, I did predict that he would play well and be all SEC. So I'm gonna hang my hat on that bold prediction. Gary can attest to that. But I do think that, yeah, if we win the Natty, he's gonna be a first round pick. He'll because he'll have to beat an Ohio State, to beat an Oregon, to beat a Notre Dame who's still got a good defense, to beat Georgia again, whoever it is we're gonna have to face, Texas Tech, he's gonna have to be on. We're not winning it based on a running game.
Yeah, and also next year's team, I mean, I don't know what we have coming in, but we're going to lose a good bit of this next year off this team. We have a lot of receivers and defensive backs and linemen who are going to be going pro. So he might just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go first round of the draft and get my money.
Well, and you can't blame him. If he's going to be a first round pick, he needs to go. He needs to go. And I would encourage him to do that. I mean, Ty, if you're listening, if you're a first round pick and we win the Natty, you have my blessing to go. So, Gary, you mentioned Yanze Pierre and Kelby Collins and Eldrick Hill really made their presence felt in this game. And I noted that. I don't know if you want to expand on that a little bit, but I love seeing them out there making plays.
I would just say I don't really have much to expand other than they're making the most of their minutes. Pierre, I've said this before, I think he's a superstar in the making. But I wouldn't not say that about London Simmons. London Simmons, it could have been a tackle for a loss. He caught Pavia at the line of scrimmage. I don't think it was technically a TFL, but maybe Pavia advanced the ball 6 inches or whatever. But when you look at his closing speed for a guy that size, man, we have some players, man. That's the A-plus roster, I think, in some close games going down the stretch is going to be the difference for us. And those younger guys are a big part of that.
Yeah, we only have like one. Let's see, we have about like 12 guys, maybe 10 guys on the roster for defensive line. Yeah, about 11 guys, and I think who is it? Jeremiah Beeman's out, right, for the
Yeah,
year.
Beeman's out for the year. Jamarian Latham's out.
Yeah, so Jer Latham's considered, I guess, a linebacker, but yeah, he could play both. But defensive line, y'all, we don't have a. I mean, out of everyone available, we're playing a lot of guys right now, which is really cool to see. I mean, we played Renaud some, Collins, Overton, Smith, Keon Kelly's not playing a whole lot, but Faga plays some, Simmons and Hill and Keenan. That's a lot of guys, and we're building some good depth for this final stretch.
And I've been worried about that all year, and they really played well against Georgia and in this game, so
Yeah.
that was nice. All right, what's the good? Let's go through some good. We're gonna do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Give me two or three things. You're like, man, that was good, that was great. Give me a couple of things.
Jefferson.
I would start with Jam Miller.
Okay.
I thought he had an outstanding game, not just statistically, eyeball test. He's so hard to bring down. He runs so hard.
Blocks.
He's patient. He's explosive. He's what you want in a back.
Amen. And to boost that, just the running game as a whole. Very effective running the ball in this game. I loved it.
Yeah, the second good after that one, I think Ty Simpson, he's continuing to be good. And then, of course, we said it already, Jefferson is becoming the best linebacker we have, I think.
He is a stud. I will say good, we generated two turnovers in the red zone. We stopped two drives where they were going to come away with at least 6 points on those two drives, if not 14 or 10. That was huge, getting those two turnovers. Loved it.
Hey, y'all, just a side note, Lawson weighs about 228 and Jefferson weighs 227, according to the roster. And y'all remember Saban's early days, man, you had Hightower and Rolando McClain. They weighed 255 pounds, middle linebackers.
It's
It's
a
a
different
different,
game now.
it's a ball game.
Well, now Hightower did have incredible speed. He was big and could run. He was faster than some of those other guys, but yeah, Jefferson was just flying around the field. I loved it, loved it, loved it.
What's his name? Ronaldo or
Yeah,
remember
Rolando
that?
McClain.
Yeah,
Rolando
McClain.
McClain.
Yeah.
I sat next to him one time. That guy is a monster. He couldn't play nowadays, though, with the game, the spread
No.
game.
How about
Or,
Reuben Foster?
yeah. No, you're right, Gary. Rolando McClain would be like a defensive end now,
Right,
Yeah.
So, guys, I noted this, the bend but don't break defense in the last three quarters, and we shut them out in the second half. I'm fine with that. If we can hold teams to field goals or keep them out of the end zone, force them to punt, even if they pin us back, I'm fine with that bend but don't break defense. Let's not get gashed and give up the big explosive plays like we did to Vanderbilt in the first quarter and like we did to FSU on four or five occasions. We just cannot give up those explosive plays.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, here's another good. Vandy only scored on 2 of 9 possessions. How good was that?
That's amazing. Turnovers were huge, part of that.
All right, other good or great things of note.
I would say adjustments. We've been talking about adjustments all year. I thought our defensive adjustments in particular were pretty good at halftime.
All right, here's my final point on the good section. We won the game and we're in control and we didn't play our best game. I'd call it a B plus game. And the fact that we beat them and did so against a good team and it was our B plus game, we can play better than this. I think you're gonna have a game and call FSU our worst game of the year. And
Agreed.
maybe call Louisiana Monroe our best game of the year because we played near perfect. But I mean, they're so bad, you can't really gauge us against that. I don't know what our ceiling is, but it's much higher than what we did in this Vandy game. And I love
Agreed.
that fact. We can play a lot better. We're a really good team, and we can play a lot better. And that means, to me, we can win the Natty. Because we have that higher level we can get, and we can knock off, we can keep stacking wins with this B plus level. The effort we gave against Vandy, I think that effort's good enough to go to Missouri and win. I don't think we have to play better than that, but the level we played against Vandy may mean that if we beat Missouri, it's going to be like 20, 28-24 or something. It could be really close, but we can play a lot better than we did. So I love that. And I love having things to fix. When you get a win, and you can win, but you can still go in the film room and say, guys, we need to improve on this. We need to improve on this. Here are things you can do better. Don't get satisfied. Don't get comfortable. If you want to reach the ceiling, we've got to work on these things and get better. And I love that.
Yeah, I think the best football is ahead of us still, which is really exciting. And I think this Saturday we're going to play better than we did last week. I think the coach is going to be better. Yeah, I'm excited.
All right, how about the bad? Any bad things you guys want to point out?
I'm just kidding. There ain't no bad, John. There ain't
Ain't
no
no
bad.
bad. All right,
Kicking game.
kicking game. Woo!
Or maybe we should re reserve that one for the ugly, but.
Yeah, that may be the ugly. How about the punting game?
Yeah.
I mean, that's debatable where it fits, but definitely special teams, kicking and punting. I noted receiver drops. It's bad. We have great receivers. Just let's catch all the let's catch all the catchable balls. I would say just the weird play calls that are getting too cute. I'd call that bad.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, let's get it. Let's get into the ugly.
Yeah, the punt.
Gary, did that punt give you heartburn? Because when Rick and I were watching, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. He just shanked that.
Yes.
Brutal.
But, you know, I'm hoping the special teams play does not hurt us in a close game, but it's something I'm still kind of got a kind of sick feeling about.
Yeah.
I hope if it does bite us, it only bites us in a regular season game and we still get to 10-2. I don't want it to be that play that forces us into a 9-3 and then we're sweating whether or not we get in the playoffs. And I certainly don't want to have those ugly kicking snafus happen to us in a playoff game. Because I think this team is playoff bound. If we can keep doing what we're doing and improve just, you know, 1%, if we can improve 1% to 2% a week, we're going to the playoff, guys. I really love the momentum. I love the way we're stacking wins. But you're right, Gary. I don't want that to bite us in a playoff game and we lose because we can't make a field goal at the end of the game to win it. That would be horrible.
Yeah.
All right. Uglies. I had the kicking game down, definitely. I also said getting fooled twice on that shovel pass.
Oh, yeah.
I would say ugly would be Johnny Manziel's behavior on the sideline.
And Diego Pavia, too, getting into it with their fans. So, although I have to say, do our fans really have to do that to him? I mean,
oh,
come on. All right, let's do – how about some coaching grades? How about on the offense, what would you grade the offense and coaching on the offense?
Whole game, first half, what?
However you want to do it.
I think coaching, offense, I'd say overall – was a B plus.
I'm with you.
All right. We're in unison. Check mark, B plus. All right. How about on the defense?
A minus on me.
Yeah. Second half, A plus. First half, B minus. What do you get? A minus.
All right, I said C for the first half. I didn't like the defense in the first half. I gave it an A minus in the second half, and I gave him a B plus for the game. But, you know, I've been hard on Kane, so I can't give him an A. I'm not ready to give him an A yet. How about special teams? What do we grade the special teams?
C minus?
B minus, C plus.
I'm with Gary. I had C minus. And then what about coaching overall? What do we say coaching overall of the team and kind of?
You know, in a vacuum, if you look at the final score and say we're playing Vandy at home, you wouldn't say it would start with an A or A minus or whatever. So I would say B plus still, even though they have a great team.
Yeah.
All right. B plus. I'm right there with you guys. All right. So SEC standings. Ole Miss is at 3-0, Texas A&M's at 2-0, Alabama's at 2-0, Missouri's at 1-0, Oklahoma's at 1-0, Georgia's 2-1, LSU's 1-1, Vandy's 1-1, Tennessee's 1-1, Florida after beating Texas is 1-1, South Carolina 1-2, and Texas 0-1. I mean, you guys have any thoughts about kind of how this thing's going to shake out yet in the SEC?
Auburn's not going to win it.
Auburn's not going to win it, and I'll say I feel, just because I have a soft spot for Sark, I feel bad for Texas. I really do. They are not playing good football right now.
Yeah.
Their offense looks putrid.
Yeah.
It really looks bad. I mean, Texas is, you know, they can go on a winning streak and still make the playoffs, but, yeah, that was a brutal loss to Florida, and they're exposed. Their offense is just hideous. They have a great defense. But I think their offensive line is weak. And then Manning, no way. You know, I'm super happy we have Ty, not Manning. Let me put it that way.
I mean, my thought on the SEC standings is obviously it's early. We know that. But I think they're going to be four or five teams maybe six teams that have pretty similar records at the end of the year, whether it be 6-2 or 7-1 or I don't know, but it's going to come down to who beat who, right? I think more than the win losses.
I think we're going to get four in the playoffs for sure. We may get five. Ole Miss, if they just don't throw up on themselves, they got an easy schedule left. They're very likely to make the SEC championship game or be that team that doesn't make the SEC championship but is 6-2 and ends up with a 10-2 record and ends up in the playoffs. So Ole Miss is going to have a hard time not making the playoffs. Tennessee's actually got a pretty weak schedule as well, as does Missouri. So probably Missouri or Tennessee's going to be right there unless they have a hiccup. But hopefully we'll expose Missouri this weekend and show that they're just a mediocre team and not a great team. But we're going to find out. And Alabama's in control of our own destiny. I think we're one of the three best teams in the SEC for sure. I think we ought to make the playoffs, but DeBoer's got to show that he can win three or four road games in the SEC. I'm confident we're going to win all of our home games. We just need to go 6-1 and get to that 10-2 mark, or let's go 7-0 and let's get to that 11-1 mark. I'm feeling good about that. What's going to happen with Mateer? I think Oklahoma's season hinges on Mateer. But they're good. They have a great defense. Georgia, we know, is good. You can't count them out. Guys, I don't think LSU is going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to lose three or four SEC games. I think Vanderbilt may beat LSU. I think LSU's in trouble. Nussmeier's hurt. I think Texas A&M's really good, but I'm still skeptical of Marcel Reed as a throwing quarterback. He can run like crazy, but I'm not sure. He's got good receivers, and Texas A&M's good, and we're going to find out more because they've got some tough games coming up. And I mean, if Florida reeled off a bunch of wins here, they could end up 9-3, and that they could cause a lot of chaos because they've got a tough schedule, and they could deal out some losses. So, yeah, there's just a lot to be determined, but I like where Alabama's positioned.
Well, I think if you're a Florida fan, you hope you don't win. I mean, it's
You
kind of like when we
mean
had
time to
Tim
get,
Tebow.
yeah, time to get rid of mediocre Billy Napier?
Yeah.
Call him 8-4, 9-3 Billy. All right, so let's talk about playoff teams. I kind of think these five teams are locks for me. Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana. They're the cream of the crop in the Big Ten, and they have such weak schedules that all three of them are probably going to go 10-2 at worst. One of them may go 12-0, another one 11-1. I think those three are a lock to get in. The ACC's weak. Miami seems to be the cream of the crop there. I'm assuming Miami's not going to throw up on themselves. They're going to get in. And Texas Tech bought themselves a heck of a roster. I think Texas Tech is going to win the Big 12. So I'm putting those down as locks, but something weird could happen. Injuries, team loses their way and craters. But those five seem to me like locks that are going to get in. Any thoughts on those?
You're probably right there. I like those five also. The locks.
And then I put these. There's about eight or nine that I think are likely to get in, but obviously they can't all get in. But I put Ole Miss, Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Georgia Tech, Missouri, BYU, and Memphis are all at that next level that they have a good shot to get in, but they've just got some hurdles to overcome if they want to get there. I mean, we have a tough series of games, but I think we can win them all for us to get in there. Georgia's obviously taking a loss to us. Georgia's, got to go down on the plains and make sure they beat up on Auburn pretty good and knock them out. But that's who I had is likely to make it in. Any thoughts there?
Sounds right.
And then the next level, I had LSU, Tennessee, Michigan, Notre Dame, Virginia, Vandy, Illinois, as I said, LSU, and then FSU. they're all fighting to get in, but they're going to have to stay hot, and they can't get to that three loss level if they want to get in. FSU losing to Virginia helps Virginia, but it hurts FSU's chance to get in. I think Michigan's going to run the table, guys, and end up 10-2. And I mean, not Michigan. Notre Dame's going to go 10-2, and I think because they've lost to two really good teams, they're probably going to get in, even though I'm not sure they deserve it.
Yeah, that seems like there's a big bias to them, so I think they'll get in. It's crazy.
I put Texas in this group called Outside Looking In. I had Texas, Iowa State, Arizona State, South Florida could still get in, but they gotta earn it, and they gotta get hot, and they gotta get right. So I have them not likely to get in, but we'll see. And then I put Penn State and Clemson as eliminated, which is hard to believe.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm hoping Pittsburgh can pull, maybe get Notre Dame when Notre Dame goes to Pitt. We'll see.
Well, and Miami's been tested. I mean, you look, they played Notre Dame, Florida State, South Florida. I mean, of the teams that are sort of in that top tier, they've probably been tested more than anybody.
Yeah, no, they're in great shape unless they just. But Mario Cristobal has a way of losing a big game when he shouldn't do it. He did it at Oregon. He's done it at Miami. They let FSU, they kind of let off the gas at the end of that game because they had FSU just down and out and gave up some garbage time touchdowns. So he's just got to avoid that. But they're good. They're really, really good. The odds to make the playoffs, interestingly enough, Alabama's a -300 in betting odds. So that means you have to bet $300 to get 100. Those are really good odds. So Vegas likes our chances. So that makes me feel good about where we are. But guys, still got to go to Missouri and win. Still got to go to South Carolina and win. Still got to go down to Auburn and win. Got to beat Oklahoma here. Got to beat Tennessee here. Got to beat
LSU.
LSU. Yeah. So I mean, we still got to beat Eastern Illinois. Don't sleep on Eastern Illinois.
That's right.
That's the Austin Mack game.
That's right. That's the Austin Mack showcasing himself for his next place where he's going to be playing. So, hope that's not the case. I hope we keep all three of those guys, but I just think realistically in this portal world, only two of those three quarterbacks will be on our roster next year. So, hopefully, win the Natty, tie goes pro, and we keep the other two. Heisman odds, Ty Simpson is number three. I love it. He is an 8-1 right now to win the Heisman. Dante Moore is 6-1, and Carson Beck is 7.5-1 to win it. So love that. Just I love it, love it, love it. But don't care about the Heisman. I want to win the Natty. I want to get in the playoffs and win the Natty. So estimated chance for Bama to win. These are ESPN. These are all of our games. And Gary, I think you said we're favored in every one of them. We have a 63% chance, according to ESPN, to beat Missouri, 72% chance to beat Tennessee, 79% to beat South Carolina, 77% chance to beat LSU, 74% chance to beat Oklahoma, 99% chance to beat Eastern Illinois. Don't sleep on them. And a 74% chance to beat Auburn. So we're in control. We're in great shape, but we just got to do it on the field. All right. Parting shots, guys. T-Pain, parting shots.
Let's keep this train rolling down the tracks, baby. Yeah, I think the team's doing great. I'm excited to see the improvement this week from players and coaches. And let's keep it going. I'm excited.
G Money, parting shots.
Parting shots, excited about the game. Not excited about the 11 o'clock kickoff this weekend. And we got some momentum. Let's keep riding it, I think, and we'll talk about it later. I think we're going to expose Missouri.
Adios, Diego. Bye-bye. All right, now we're going to the Show Me State, and we're going to show them how the tide rolls, baby.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
All right. Thank you for listening. Subscribe, follow, like, hit the notify bell, hit the notify button for the podcast wherever you stream us. God bless and roll tide.
Roll tide.
Roll tide.